Okay, thank you for being here this Saturday evening. So, welcome to Yogesh Prabhu and Mataji and their daughter. So, we'll start with the invocation prayers. Whoever knows, they can recite with me. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurakshe Nama Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Vataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Okay, so anybody knows what we were discussing last time?
Arjuna accepted Krishna as his guru.
Okay, so Arjuna accepted Krishna as his guru. So what verse was that?
Karpanna dosha bhavati
Very nice. Okay, so there are a couple of copies that somebody wants to take. So that is 2.7. So we are discussing Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. So last time we discussed from, we discussed only I guess 2.10 and 11. No, 10, 11 and 12 I guess. So every week we take few shlokas. So we recite those shlokas and we go over some discussion on that. So we'll continue. Today's shloka is, we will continue from 2.13, chapter 2, text 13. So now we are moving into the, from last verse or last couple of verses where Krishna finally started speaking. That's where we started the real message of Bhagavad Gita. Right? When Krishna started speaking finally after Arjuna's surrender. Starting from text, chapter 2, text 10. No, no, today we will continue with 2.13. Okay, so chapter 2, text 13, everybody has opened that. So we'll recite the shloka first. Dehino asmin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatrana muhyati. Anybody would like to recite?
adehantara prakte dhirastatra na muhati.
Okay. Anybody else from Mataji's side?
Dahino smin yatha dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara prakte dhirastatra na muhati.
Dehino asmin yatha dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra na muhyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So, when we did the overview of chapter 2, so at the beginning of every chapter, we try to do as a bird's eye view, okay, what is as the overall flow of this chapter, to understand what is the overall flow of this discussion going on between Lord Krishna and Arjuna. So in this chapter 2, which is contents of Gita summarized, Gita ka sar, or also known as Sankhya Yoga. So the overall flow of discussion, or overall flow of thoughts is, the acronym used is Gita. So if you remember, the chapter 2 acronym is Gita. So G stands for Guru, where Arjuna finally accepts Krishna as Guru, surrenders unto him, right? Karpanya dosham. So karpanya dosha upahata sabhava. So in that shloka, Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and accepted him as his guru. And then as soon as Krishna took the role of guru, he started giving instructions. So far, Krishna was just listening to Arjuna. Whatever Arjuna is telling, whatever reason he is giving not to fight, Krishna is just listening. And in between, maybe once he gave as a little pep talk, it doesn't befit you. As a Kshatriya, whatever you are saying, it's not befitting you. So, but then when Arjuna finally surrendered, then Lord Krishna started speaking as the role of a guru. And as soon as he started speaking, what is the first word he used? He chastised Arjuna that you are a fool number one. Mudha. You are speaking like a learned person, quoting all these shastras, dharam shastra, arth shastra and everything. But you don't know what is the value of life. So G, and then the second part is I. I means identity. So the first set of instruction what Krishna gives is starting from text 12 to text 30. So this set of verses is towards the identity. What is the real identity? We are not this body. We are the spirit soul. This body is temporary. The soul is permanent, eternal. When the body dies, the soul does not die. So giving the real identity. So that is the first set of instruction Krishna starts. And then G-I-T, right? So in Gita acronym, T. T stands for two duties. So 31st to 54 onwards, Krishna is describing two duties. What are those two duties? Swadharma and Sanatan Dharma. So Swadharma is based on the bodily platform, based on our occupational duties as a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra or a Brahmana. So as per the Varnashram system, whatever our nature is, act based on that. That is Swadharma. And then Sanatan Dharma is our eternal duty. Being as a spirit soul, as a part and parcel of the Lord, what is our eternal duty? So that is Sanatan Dharma, to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, to serve the Lord. So two duties. And then comes A. A means, anybody remembers? Atmaram. Atmaram means a transcendentalist. So Arjuna asks another set of questions in the last phase of this chapter. What are the characteristics of a transcendentalist person? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? What are the qualities? So, sthita pragya. So that is the Sanskrit word, Stitta Pragya or Transcendentalist or Atmaram. So that is the overall flow of this chapter. So now we are in the second part, identity, describing. Krishna is describing the real identity. So here Krishna says, the living entity, so this is a very common picture or a popular picture used to describe how the soul passes within this body. So we take birth as a child, then the body grows, we become a teenager, a youth, an adult person, then we grow up, become old, and then person dies, the soul moves on to another body. So that is what Krishna is describing in this verse. As the soul continuously passes within this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly at the time of death, it passes into another body. And who is not bewildered? Dhiras. Dhiras tatrana muhyate. A sober person is not bewildered by this change. So everybody has belief in the existence of soul. Everybody agrees there is something called soul. We are not this body. There is something beyond this body. So first, sometimes people need to come to that understanding level. For the time when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, all these principles, the Atma, Karma, God, all these were implied principles. Everybody understood or agreed with those principles. Now, when we talk philosophy, when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, first people do not have faith in these things, first of all. They don't believe, oh, there is something called Atma or soul, and there is something called Karma or Punarjanma, reincarnation. So first need to bring people to that platform to understand that. So everybody understand here that, okay, there is something beyond this body. Now, Krishna uses the word sober. The sober person can understand. What is mean by sober? Who is a sober person? So the discussion flow with certain keywords we take from the shloka and try to understand that, okay, what does it really mean? So who is a dhiras? Who is a dhira? A sober person. See, in some time when people are talking, they go to a pub, they're drinking, and somebody may say, oh, after two pegs, I'm still sober. Nothing happened to me after two pegs. I'm still a sober person. So is that really a definition of sober? So what Krishna is describing, sober, generally sober is used in today's context. Generally people use this word, who is not under the influence of intoxication. That is considered sober. Right? So from here, what Krishna is speaking, what does dhira means, sober means?
Who doesn't get bewildered by...
Who is not bewildered by what?
The changes. You know,
the changes.
Body, the bodily changes.
The bodily changes. So, this bodily platform or the attachment with this bodily platform is also a sort of intoxication. When we are so much attached with this bodily concept, oh, I am this, I am such and such. So, that is also intoxication. So, a person who is free from that kind of intoxication, free from the bodily concept of life, who understand the reality that I am not this body, I am beyond this, he is not bewildered. He can see what is going on, what change is going on. So that is considered a sober person, a dhira, who is free from the bodily attachment, bodily platform. Now, here if you carefully analyze this shloka, has Krishna used the word Atma? So what are the words used here? So that is the second part. So Krishna has not used the word Atma yet. Throughout first chapter or second chapter up to 13 shloka here, Krishna has never used the word Atma. Because Arjuna is on the bodily platform. He is thinking, I will kill all my relatives. To win this war, I have to kill everybody. That was his one of the reasons for not fighting. Right? Killing of all the elderly people or all the relatives. So Arjuna is considered right now in the bodily platform. So Krishna is using the word deha and dehi. Dehino asmin. So the dehi which is in this deha. So this body is called deha. And the one who lives inside the body is called dehi, who occupies this body. Right? So when we use the word dehant, right, in Hindi you use the word unka dehant ho gaya. So what does it mean? Deha ant. So the body ended. Right? His body has finished. So that is dehant. Now, in our common terminology, how we differentiate between the body and the soul? How we understand we are not this body? What is the common sense factors? Any common sense factors to differentiate that we are not the body? The common sense terminologies we use on a kind of regular basis.
Soul.
Right, but how do we understand that? In our common phrases. Right, so when somebody passes away, we say, Mr. Such and Such passed away. So who has passed away? Body is still lying there. Right? So who has passed away? It means something else is there in the body which has left the body. So unka dehant ho gaya. Wo gujar gaye. So kaun gujar gaye? Agar unka sharir yahin par pada hai, to kaun gujar gaye? And then another common sense factor is when you talk about yourself. If I say, okay, raise your hand. Raise your hand. What is this? What will you say? This is my hand. Do you say I hand? I raise myself up. So we say it's my hand. My head, my face, my body, my cloth. So everybody we refer as my. So it's not I hand, I body, I face, I head. So I am different from this body. I am something different who is residing in the body. So that's where Krishna is referring dehi. So one who is residing in the body. But now somebody may argue, okay, but how can that be with one specific person? Based on the medical science, there are many bacteria, many things live inside the body. So there are thousands and thousands, millions of bacteria within our body. So, are those all the dehi? So, all those are the living entities or the individual souls living in the body. Are they all the dehi? So, who is the specific dehi? So, there is one main person who occupies the body. But there may be some other living entities living inside. To understand that example, to understand that point, example is, let's say if I ask you, what is your address? What will you say? What is your address? Okay, such and such apartment number in this, on this road, on this city. Right? That is my address. Who all live in that house? What will you say? Me, my wife and my child. Will you say, oh no, there is one cockroach there, one mosquito there, one spider there. All they also live in my apartment. They are also the residents of that apartment. Right? So there may be many mosquitoes, many spiders, bugs. All these lizards, they may be crawling on the walls of your house, but they are not considered as a regular residents of that house. There may be Mr. Birla's house, Mr. Ambani's house, and there may be some mosquito living there. If you ask, what is your address? Oh, I live in Birla Bhavan. So does that make him the resident of that house? So who is the main dehi? So who is the owner of that house? Right? Who is the resident, main owner? So same way, we, the one who owns this body, who occupies this body, is the real dehi. Now comes the next point. The transmigration of the soul. So there is transmigration, or the, we know the word incarnation, or the reincarnation. So there is two type of reincarnation happening at all the time. And Krishna has already described both in this shloka. So one reincarnation is happening within this lifetime. We are changing the body within this life. Right? Krishna says, as the soul, as the embodied being passes within this body, from boyhood to youth to old age. So throughout this life, are we changing the body? Are we changing the body or no?
No.
No.
The body is changing. There is a changes in the body because we have boyhood to youth to old age.
Right. Yeah, yeah, so example is when you were a child. Let's say now, what's your name? Gautam, right? So you are here. How old are you?
9.
So you have a certain body. When you were 3 years old, were you look like same?
No.
You were looking different, right? And you grow up, will you look same?
No.
So there will be changes, gradual changes happening. So the change is happening all the time. Even medical science shows after 7 years, no single cell remains the same. So after 7 years, the body is completely different. No cell in the body after 7 years is same 7 years old. So there is change happening all the time in the body. So we are changing the body within this life. So that is internal change. And then there is a sudden change. At the time of death, one leaves this body and accepts another body. Again gets into the womb of a mother, a small body comes which again grows. So the change is happening at both time. So now the internal change, we cannot see that change, but you can see in one sense, like we ask a child, you were like this, now you are like that. It happens, right? What is in our common word, common day terminology we use? Oh, you were like this, now he has grown up, now he is like this. Oh, he is so tall, now he has grown so intelligent. So there is a change happening all the time. I may be using a different laptop 2 years back, but now I may be using a different laptop. So the laptop has changed, but the user of the laptop remains the same. So same way, the body within this life is changing, but the owner of that body, he remains the same. We don't say, oh, you have changed, it's a new you. We say, you were like this, now you are like this. So the person who owns, occupies that body, he remains the same. And we can relate to that. Our consciousness, still we remember all the childhood sometime things, right? Even when I was 10 years old, you may remember some of those things. So I am the same, even though my body may be completely changed. Now there is a something called problem of part by replacement or replacement by part. Because the gradual change which is happening, we may not be able to see that change. How is that? Let's say if you have a car. If you have a car, the car may be having 100 different parts. If you change one part of the car, will you say it's a new car? Oh, I changed the wheels of the car, now it's a new car. Or I changed the paint of the car, now it's a new car. So at what time, so if 100 parts, how many parts change, at what stage you will say it's new? So that is called the problem of replacement by part. So there is some stage where you say, okay, now it's different, now it's completely new. So when it is changing, something is changing gradually. Out of 100 parts, maybe 10 parts change, still you will say, oh, it's same car, only these things change. So same way, within this lifetime, our face is changing, our body is growing, hands become big, legs become big, the overall body grows to a different height. So changes are happening gradually, but still it's considered, okay, same person. But there is external change, a sudden change, when the person leaves the body. So that is external, leaving the body and getting a completely new body. So that's why it's called two type of incarnation, external and internal. Internal incarnation is happening all the time, within this lifetime also. So another point, what Krishna is using here, Krishna is explaining with example. As the body changes, or as the embodied being changes within this life, from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly, the soul passes into another body at death. So what is this whole, if you analyze, what is this? This is example. Right, Krishna is giving example to explain the principle of What is the principle explained here? So what is the principle explained by this example?
Identity.
Principle of reincarnation. Right? So the principle is reincarnation, that the soul doesn't die, it takes another body. So reincarnation, what is the meaning of reincarnation? Incarnation means to come again. Re means to come again. So when we come again in a new body, so that is reincarnation. So Krishna is explaining the principle of reincarnation by using an example. So Krishna uses example. So that is the beauty of explaining through our scriptures the difference between the Upanishads and the Puranas. So sometimes people say, I want original Vedas, or I want to go with the Upanishads, deep philosophy. I don't want Puranas, I want Upanishads. So what is the difference in Upanishad and Puranas? So if you read Upanishads, Upanishads is purely principles. Just plain principles described in Upanishads without the use of examples. So with our today's level of intelligence, even if we read the Upanishads, we will not even understand one shloka. So that's why the importance is given to understand through Puranas, through the histories, Ramayana, Mahabharata. And Krishna is giving Bhagavad Gita. What is Bhagavad Gita? It is the essence of all the Upanishads. Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Nandana. So he is giving the essence of all the Upanishads. And here Krishna himself is explaining with examples, the core principles. So the Purana, so Upanishad is purely principles. The statements are just describing principles. But in Puranas, what happens is, all the same principles are described through the stories. So for example, in Bhagavatam, to explain this same principle of reincarnation, there is a very nice story of King Chitraketu. Right? Everybody knows the story of King Chitraketu. What is the story, briefly, in 2 minutes? You want to tell?
Yeah, they didn't have a son, so he was very sad. Then Angira Rishi came and he told him, this is why you are not so happy, you have everything. Then he told him that because he doesn't have a son. Then they did the jagga and they got a son, but the other queens, they become so jealous that when the baby was, I think, few days old, they gave him poison. So the baby died, and he became more sad this time. Then the rishis again came, and they invoked the soul of the boy, the child. And the child told Chitraketu that I had so many fathers, mothers and all those, in my different lives. So it's something like that. Who are you, how do I recognize you as my father?
Nice, thank you. So this whole story is to describe the same principle of reincarnation. So when the body dies, the soul goes into another body. So the whole, this principle is explained through a story. So people can relate to that, they can understand it with example. And it gives us some motivation also to understand or to practically apply it. So what happened was, when King Chitraketu, when the son died, Angira Rishi and Narad Muni disguised again came back. And they said, why are you so morose? It is just as the particles of sand with heavy wind, they come together and again they are separated. Or the blades of grass, with the blow of air, they sometimes come together and they get separated again. So same way the living entities, they come together in different forms, different relationships. They become father, mother, son, relatives, friends, and again they get separated. So you should not be morose based on that. But then King Chitraketu, to make him understand, they brought the soul back. They brought the soul back into the body of that boy which died. And as soon as the boy rose up, wake up, he said, the king Chitraketu, he was saying, I am your father, she is your mother. He said, which father, which mother? I have taken so many births. I have been sometime into animal species, sometime into bird species, sometime into a flower or a vegetable or a plant. Sometime I have been a demigod, sometime a human being. So in all these lives, I have been so many fathers and mothers. Which father and mother you are? So I don't have a... I am an eternal living entity. I don't have a particular father or mother. So the whole story explains the same principle. The body, when the body dies, the soul enters into another body. And finally, in this verse, what Krishna is describing, any other point or question somebody has before I move on?
I think also Chitraketu, the son was very annoyed after calling upon him in the body.
Son was what?
Called upon in the body, right? Again, and he's very annoyed. Why did he call? I was going towards something else. Something like that.
Right, so as...
It was kind of disturbance in the process.
Right, so generally what we have is the process. When somebody dies, there is a duration. So the soul is for that much duration, it's called maybe 13 days of period, when the soul is still around the body, because there is so much attachment with the body, so the soul remains in that place. So that's why we have a process of what is called, what is that called?
Shraddha.
Not Shraddha, it's
Karmakanda.
The Karmakanda principles are there, and then there is a final sending off the living entity, right? Sending of the soul, that now you depart to your next destination.
That is the 13th.
Anteshti.
11th day.
Right, so people do it at different parts, they have a different culture. Some do it at the 11th day, some do it at the 13th day. So that process is there. And the Puranas describe the living entity, even though if the based on the fruitive activities of that living entity, pious or impious, the Yamdutas come to take it to the next destination. And the soul comes running back to that body because of so much attachment to that. And if the soul, because it's around that body, around that atmosphere, when it sees all my relatives,
right,
my family, they're crying for me in my separation, so it becomes even more disturbed, more attached to that environment. So that's why we say when somebody passes away, one should not cry. Because that living entity has to drink the tears of all the relatives and all who are crying. So it becomes even more, much more suffering condition for the living entity.
Vishal, if they did not do any Shraddha and kind of things, whether soul remains there itself?
No, the soul has to finally go. Based on its condition, the Yamadutas will drag the soul to take it to its next destination. But based on its conditioning or its consciousness, the next stage what it gets is determined based on that. So the next destination what the soul gets is based on the activities he has done and the type of consciousness it has at the end of the life. So Krishna described in 8th chapter that whatever state of being one remembers at the time of death, that state one attains.
Again, I have one question here. I think last time also I asked, but at the time it was not clear for me. Now, it based on karma, it takes two different life forms. Whether now whatever we are doing, right thing or right thing, is done by soul itself, soul only.
Okay, let's come to the next part.
Okay.
Next, let's go to the next verse. And the whole principle of karma, it will be discussed in this set of verses. When we go up to maybe 20 or 22, we'll discuss the little principle of reincarnation, how one gets the new body, what determines what type of body we'll get, and who decides that, right? Who decides what I will become in next life? Can I choose? Or who will decide? And the little karma principle. And who suffers, even within this lifetime, who is suffering? Is the soul is suffering or enjoying, or is it the body who is enjoying or suffering? So let's move to the next verse. If nobody has any other point or question or comment. So chapter 2 text 14. Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukhada agma payano nityastam titikshasva bharata. Anybody would like to recite? Amla?
Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukhada agma payano nityastam titikshasva bharata.
Matajis.
Matra sparastu kanteyastu
titikshasva. Okay, let's do one thing. We'll recite together, or I will recite first part, you recite the behind me. Matra sparshastu kaunteya.
Matra sparshastu kaunteya.
Shitoshna sukha dukhada.
Shitoshna sukha dukhada.
Agma payano nityas.
Agma payano nityas.
Tam stitikshasva bharata.
Tam stitikshasva bharata.
O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer season. They arise from sense perception, O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate without being disturbed. So, continuing with the same thought, Krishna described the nature, the real nature, that we are not this body. So don't think all your relatives will be killed because they are not the body. They are soul and they will get a new body. So this is the principle which Krishna is explaining to Arjuna to counter his first reason of not fighting. Right? Compassion for the body, that I have to kill all of them. So they will continue. Krishna is saying they are not this body. There is something which is living in the body and they will get a new body. So here, Krishna is describing one should try to execute one's duty without being disturbed by external factors. Because this happiness or distress is like a summer and winter season which come and go. And one should learn to tolerate all these dualities while executing one's duty. So if we go with word by word, Krishna doesn't use the word indriya here, senses, for senses. What is the word used? Matra and sparshas. So, they arise from sense perception. When the sense object come in contact with the senses, all these dualities come. The happiness and distress. So matra, why the word matra is used to describe senses? So in senses, our mind also come in senses. And what are the senses doing always? We are always measuring how much happiness, how much suffering, how much it's tasty or distasteful. So we are always measuring the quantity of happiness and distress. So that is the nature of senses. Senses are always measuring the pain and pleasure. So it's described the word with word matra. Sparshas. Sparsha is what? One of the sense object. Touch. So when the sense object come in contact with senses, we discriminate between the pleasure and pain. So when you taste something, right? As soon as some object touch your tongue, what do you do? We what measure. Is going on?
We measure how
good. Measure.
It is.
Yeah. It's tasty or not tasty. Mm-hmm. When you touch some object, what is the measurement going on? Is it soft or rough? Yeah. Right?
Cold.
It's cold or hot. Mm-hmm. So all that measurement is going on. So matra sparshas. So as the objects come in touch with the senses, this measurement goes on. That's why Krishna is saying this senses are always trying to discriminate between happiness and distress. But one should try to tolerate that. This is like the summer and winter season, which come and go. But one should not be disturbed for executing the duty. And Prabhupada gives the example in the purport. There may be very hot season, but a woman is not, so she is always doing her duty. If she has to cook in a hot season in the kitchen, she has to do all the household duties. She is not bothered by the external factors while executing the duty. So same way, a person following the regulative principle, he is supposed to take bath in the morning. And one should not be disturbed if it's a summer or cold weather. So one should execute one's duty without being disturbed, because these are non-permanent. So now one may question, in the previous verse, Krishna described we are not the body but the soul. And after describing that, immediately in this next verse, Krishna is again addressing Arjuna from a bodily point of view. What are Arjuna's address used here? So Arjuna is addressed with two different names in this shloka. What is that? Matra sparshastu Kaunteya. So first address is Kaunteya. And at the end, Bharata. Tam stitikshasva Bharata. So Arjuna is described by Kaunteya and Bharata. And what is that? A bodily designation. Kaunteya means being as a son of Kunti. And Bharata means as a descendant of Maharaj Bharat in that dynasty. So, after describing, we are not this body but the soul, why Krishna is again addressing him from a bodily point of view? Isn't it? What is the answer? Anybody has any thought? Any comment on that?
Both are correct. Both are correct in both different planes.
Both are correct, but why? Just describing that don't think you are this body, you are the soul. Why to address somebody from again bodily point of view?
And Atma, soul is there in the body. Still we call him with his identity.
Okay.
And still my soul is in my... In my
so we...
Still
we are so much used to of identifying with the body.
Right?
But then Krishna should not be doing that. He knows. We who are under the influence of this bodily concept of life, we do that because we identify with the body. But why Krishna will do that?
No, he is telling this to Arjuna.
Yeah.
Because Arjuna is in body plane.
Right. Arjuna is in the body platform. So what does Krishna is doing? To encourage him to act from a better perspective. For example, when somebody has a higher or a heritage, a bigger heritage, you use that reference to invoke, to encourage him to do some bigger task. So Krishna is describing from a heritage point of view, you have a great heritage from your mother point of view, from your mother's side also, from your father's side also. You belong to a great family. So you should act in a great way. Kaunteya and Bharata, both are addressed to signify his great heritage. The same way when Prabhupada was addressing his early disciples, Prabhupada always will mention, I am not the body, I am the soul. So in a lot of his lecture, if you listen, Prabhupada is stressing on this point. I am not the body, I am the soul.
You say, I am the spirit soul.
I am the spirit soul.
Yes.
And sometimes disciples will think, maybe Swamiji is the soul, we are just the body. Maybe Swami is talking about himself, he is the spirit soul. So, Prabhupada is describing, and then he will tell his disciples sometime, you all American, European boys and girls, you have a great heritage, like so much opulence in your country, you should do a big work. You should arrange or organize a big program. So what is it? It is to encourage them to act in a great way, using your conditions or your heritage. So same way when he will address sometime the Indian community, Indian bodied people, he will say, you Indians, you have a great heritage of this culture. This culture is your culture, this Vedic culture. So you should accept this culture and act in a great way. So sometime the bodily address is used to signify the family heritage or the background, to invoke some people, to encourage to act in a great way. So that's how Krishna is addressing Arjuna here. From both sides, your mother's side and father's side, you have a great family heritage. So act in a great way. Don't get absorbed, consumed with these dualities of life. Now the point, which question he raised. Now, is the soul suffering or soul enjoying? Who is enjoying really? When we talk about this distress and happiness, in this lifetime also, is the soul suffering or enjoying, or is it the body who is suffering or enjoying?
So my question is, what are right?
We'll come to that question also. Okay. Body. So is this the body who is suffering or enjoying?
Yes.
Most of you say body? Yes. No, but it's body.
A soul, I think.
Body is a dead matter. Mm-hmm. If there is no soul, body is a dead matter. Now how can the matter suffer or enjoy? For example, let's say now, if I have this phone, if I throw this phone on the ground, is this phone going to cry? Oh, you hit me so hard. It's a dead matter. It doesn't experience any pleasure or pain. So same way body, it's made of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So as a dead matter, it doesn't have any feeling of happiness or distress. So is the body suffering or enjoying? So another example is, let's say you are sitting on this floor. You keep sitting on it for hour. Is the floor going to say, oh, it's too much load on me, please get up? No, right? So matter has no feeling, no enjoyment or distress. So who is suffering? Is this the soul? So now answer changes to soul. Now soul is considered as Sat-Chit-Anand. Soul is full of eternity, bliss and knowledge. So it's always blissful. So if soul is always blissful, how can soul feel distress? Isn't it? So then how come it's Sat-Chit-Anand? If soul is feeling distress, the soul cannot be considered as Sat-Chit-Anand. So who is enjoying or suffering?
Mind.
Mind? The answer will keep changing. We'll say body, then mind, then intelligence or the soul. So what is the explanation here is, the soul is not enjoying or suffering, the body itself is not enjoying or suffering. Whatever the experiences we are getting, it is when the soul comes in contact with the material nature, identifies itself with the body, it imagines to be enjoying or suffering. It imagines to be going through distress or pleasure. So it's the word of imagine. How is that? In a dream. So in a dream, what happens? When you are sleeping, you are in a dream, you may be chased by a tiger. So when the tiger is chasing you, you are maybe sweating and so much of distress. So it feels all real. Right? But as soon as the dream breaks, you come out of that dream, you think, oh, it was just a dream. Then there is no distress. So what was happening? When we were in the dream, it was feeling like very real. And we were experiencing that suffering. So same way in a dream, if you become a king, you are sitting on a big nice throne, nice decorated, so many varieties of food in front of you. You are enjoying in the dream. It feels all very real. You think, oh, I am enjoying. And as soon as the dream breaks, you think you come back again in your miserable life. Oh, everything is gone. So in the dream, it felt all very real. And you were really experiencing that enjoyment. So what was that? It was all the imagination. Identifying with that which we are not. That imagination or that illusion is causing that pleasure or pain. So again, the scriptures give another wonderful example. To understand the same principle, I said, the Puranas give all the stories to describe the principles. So there is a nice story. Once a king, he was dreaming that he is a butterfly and he is going to different flowers, taking all the fragrance, and it looked very real. So in a dream, everything was looking so real. And in the early morning, the king came out of the dream and now he thought, oh, I am a king. So he couldn't sleep after that because one thought was bothering him a lot. He summoned all his ministers immediately in the night, 2 o'clock. All the ministers came running and king asked them one question. So I'm going to ask you one question. If you don't answer, I'm going to chop off your head. And the question is, I saw a dream that in the dream I was a butterfly. I was going through all these different flowers, getting the fragrance, smell. And now the dream broke. I think now I feel I'm a king and you all are my ministers and all. So now my question is, was that a dream that I'm a butterfly? Or in reality I'm a butterfly and now I'm dreaming that I'm a king? So which one is a dream? So in actual sense, I'm a butterfly or I'm a king? So I'm dreaming now or I was dreaming that time? So all these ministers. So if this question was to be asked to you, okay, answer this question and the sword is hanging on your neck. So what is the answer here?
Both dreams.
Both dreams. So this life also, from the point of view of the soul, from the point of view of eternity, this life is like a dream. So this life, we are going through all these different experiences, pleasures and pain. We are imagining by identifying ourselves with this body. That I am going through this, I am going through that. But then, at the time of death, the soul wakes up from the dream and it goes into a different scenario. Right? So again, same principle to explain the reincarnation. This whole concept, this pleasures and pain, what Krishna is telling is non-permanent. It is because we identify ourselves with a set of conditions, we experience this. So one should not be bothered with it and try to tolerate. Tams titikshasva bharata. So titikshva word is mean tolerant. So try to tolerate. Now this word tolerate, when we say tolerate, in the media, this word tolerance is used from religious tolerance point of view. In India especially, when Modi government came, this was a big worst word, right? Oh, there's so much of religious intolerance there now. So what Krishna is describing, tolerate all this situation because we are not this body, you are in a set of condition. And sometimes people use this philosophy, if we understand this little philosophy, we try to beat others with this trick of tolerance. Oh, you should tolerate. I can do something wrong. You should learn to tolerate. Sometimes kids also may use it wrong way. Daddy, didn't you hear what Prabhu said in the class? Learn to tolerate. So, sometimes we hide our mistake and tell others, you should learn to tolerate. But this word is for us, for our introspection, that I should learn to tolerate these dualities, not quoting it to others. You should be humble, you should tolerate. Any other points, comments, question on this?
The story what you describe is basically that story of King Janaka. And the guy who answered his Ashtavakra.
Right.
He said, neither of this truth, only truth is Brahman.
So should we move to the next verse or stop here?
You said that the soul is imagining or experiencing like this, but soul is complete chitta, means it has complete knowledge. So there is no excuse of him, there is no ignorance, there is no excuse of imagination. So
what I say, the complete sentence, the word is, as soon as the soul come in touch with the material nature, it gets influenced by the three modes of material nature, the sattva-guna, tamo-guna, raja-guna. Under the influence of these material nature and the gunas of material nature, it identifies with the body.
Yeah, it's like, if I know this is the mobile, this is to use for car,
right.
This is my knowledge. If something external comes and tells this is to play, it's a toy, so then I will not accept. So the same way, soul is completely knowledgeable about the person. Then why it is disturbed because of this material?
But soul has a tendency to be influenced by the nature. That is also Krishna's energy. So soul is one of the energy, okay, which is marginal energy. Tathastha Shakti. So same way, Krishna has three categories of energy. The internal energy, the internal potency, the external energy, the Bahiranga Shakti, and the marginal energy, the tathastha shakti, which is soul. So soul is very marginal. So it can be on this side or that side. So if the soul stays under the influence of internal energy of Krishna, then it's completely under the influence of that, it has no scope of falling down. But as soon as the soul comes under the contact of external energy, material energy, it gets covered up. Because it's a marginal energy, tathastha shakti. So like for example, on a beach, if there is a very narrow line, on this side is water, on this side is sand, and you are walking on a very narrow path. So as soon as you are on this side, you touch the water. And on the other side, you are on the dry part. So it can come under the influence of any of those things. So same way soul, it can be influenced by Krishna's external energy, Maya Shakti, or it can be under the influence of internal energy. And what was your question? Let's discuss that little bit before we, because...
whether I am doing right thing or good thing.
Right thing or good thing?
Good thing. Bad thing.
Okay.
Good or bad. Is done by soul or what?
So, who is doing the good or bad? Again.
So, if now I am doing something good or bad, it is done by, means soul or what?
So, the credit goes into soul's account. So, the soul will experience, it's an experience, but the soul has to go through those experiences. Now, why certain type of dream come? To give us a certain level of experience. Right? Even though it's considered as a dream, but in the dream, it feels all real. And we feel that pain or pleasure. So, for us to undergo that experience, all that the balance of karma, good or bad, it goes along with the soul. All those impressions are stored in the mind. So there is a gross body, there is a subtle body and soul. So when the soul leaves the body, gross body stays there, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then there is subtle body, which is mind, intelligence and false ego. False ego means identification, the sense of identification. So that is subtle body. So these three make a subtle body, which goes along with the soul. And all the impressions are stored in the mind. So, for example, in this particular lifetime, somebody may have a phobia of water. Somebody may have a phobia of height or fire. From where that impression came? He may have never experienced drowning in the water, never experienced maybe so much height, never experienced fire. But from where all those impressions came? Because those are stored from previous life. So he may have experienced something in the previous life. So those impressions are stored. So now he has already got that kind of phobia. Because those impressions are stored in the mind, which goes along with the soul. So for example, another example I will give you. If there are 10 kids, if you put 10 kids in a row here, okay, in a kirtan program, all the 10 kids will be doing different things. Some may be very interested in doing kirtan, they may be clapping or playing mardanga. Some may be completely in their own different world. So everybody shows a different level of interest. Why is that? Because of previous conditioning or the previous impressions stored. Right? So all these impressions are stored in the memory, in the mind.
Okay, that means whatever good thing, bad thing is done by soul itself.
Under the... Again, when it comes in the contact of the material nature or a particular type of body, it experiences that. And the first of all, the karma principle applies only to the human form of life, not to the animal. Okay, lion may kill a person and eat. He doesn't get a karma for that because that's its nature. The karma principle applies only in the human form of life because human form of life, we have been given with higher intelligence to discriminate between right and wrong. So as a dog or a pig or whatever species of life, he doesn't get karma because it's just acting based on its instinct, nature. But the soul in the human form of life, when we come in contact with this nature, under the influence of three modes, we act in certain way and the bank balance of karma is associated with the individual living entity. It's not a overall consciousness that, oh, I have done something bad, but somebody else has to suffer. 100 people did something wrong, but the tsunami came somewhere else to balance the energy. It doesn't happen like that. So it has to be based on who has done what, they have to suffer the reaction. So it's associated with a particular living entity. So maybe we'll stop here today. And we'll continue from text 15 in the next session. So it's recommended if you can read few shlokas ahead of time. So when we are discussing this, you already know, okay, what has been discussed in the purport. And if you have some point or some question to discuss from that shloka. So we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We'll sing Narsimha prayer.